Here's a quick word from our football educational partners over at the Scouting Academy.
Listen, we've said it all the time. If you love the analysis and you're passionate about football, then you really need to check out the Scouting Academy. Whether you're a football coach, aspiring writer, or even aspiring football agent, the Scouting Academy is really a perfect place for you to learn and develop your skills as an analyst. With curriculum that spans over 375 years of coaching and personnel experience, the Scouting Academy offers you a 16-week online course that you can tailor and build to meet your needs and your interests. Whether you're learning about wide receivers or defensive linemen, you can make the experience what you want it to be. Listen, I've said it to you on this podcast many times. I've spent my own money, my own time, and time away from my friends and family because I am just this passionate about this game. And the Scouting Academy is the place where I really feel like I've learned the most I've ever learned about the game of football. It's made me a better analyst. It's made me a better person in terms of the coaching I do on the field. I can't say enough great things about it. If you have any questions about the Scouting Academy, please don't hesitate to reach out to Dan Hatman on Twitter or reach out to the Scouting Academy online via email. I'm open to all questions as well. Heck, I'm still even a student there myself. Please don't hesitate to reach out. I really think that once you learn all the tools and gain the knowledge that they have to offer, I really think you're going to be absolutely excited about the game of football again.
This is the Saturday to Sunday Football Podcast.
This is where it all counts. This is why we're here. This is why each one of us are here.
And now, here's your host.
And we are back. This is the Saturday to Sunday Football Podcast. I am Matt Caraccio, and joining me riding shotgun is Mr. Paul Perticchese. Paul, welcome.
Matt, glad to be back. Really excited. Special guest this evening, so bring him on in, and let's get right into this.
It's such a rarity when we get to have, I mean, Paul, this is one of my favorite times of years when we get to have guests on with such an extensive background, and few have the background that's going to be able to compare to our guest tonight. This man has scouting experience both at the collegiate level as well as at the pro level. He's worked at ESPN. He's currently a host of Steelers Nation Radio. You know him from the Dynasty Blueprint and Locked On NFL with some Browns coverage. And he just recently launched WilliamsonFootball.com, where really it is just turning out amazing content each and every day. That's right. We have Mr. Matt Williamson on with us tonight. Matt, welcome to the Saturday to Sunday Football Podcast.
Yeah, man, I'm psyched. How you guys doing tonight?
Doing well.
Good.
So, Matt, I mean, you know, now that the dust is beginning to settle, and I know you've had a tremendous amount of time to kind of start looking this over, but maybe we're still in that knee-jerk reaction phase, or maybe we feel really confident. But what we wanted to do tonight is maybe kind of take our listeners and really take me and Paul on a kind of a tour of each one of the skill positions and really kind of look at, you know, really what types of feel do you have for landing spots, scheme fits, how these players could perform both on the real NFL stage and maybe on our fantasy team. So if we kind of maybe gear and move over to the quarterback position, maybe to start out, I mean, you look at the two, you know, the top five names of this draft, and you look at Baker Mayfield going to Cleveland and Rosen going to Arizona, Darnold to the Jets, Lamar to Baltimore, and of course, Josh Allen to Buffalo. And my feel is for you is, what do you think about these top quarterbacks, where they landed and how they may be impactful for both Sunday watching football and also for our fantasy teams? What were your thoughts on this quarterback class?
Yeah. And going into the draft, I knew I was sort of in the minority, but if I was picking number one with the Browns, I would have taken Lamar Jackson. I think he's the best quarterback in this whole draft. I ranked them Jackson, Rosen, Darnold, Mayfield, a little bit of a gap, Allen. And I look at Allen going to Buffalo, and I absolutely think that, you know, they're building a Panthers-like system up there, both sides of the ball, that they see a lot of Cam Newton. I'm not sure it's a good thing, and I don't like his supporting cast, and I think he's an extremely high variance player. I was actually at the Steelers facility. I broadcasted the draft down there, And the Steelers had come out after their first round pick, and Tomlin and Colbert and were in the press room. And as it's going on, as they're talking over their shoulder, the TV's on. And at that point, at that moment, the Ravens trade back for Lamar Jackson. And I'm looking at it going, oh no, Steelers got to play against this guy for the next 10 years. And as they're walking out of the room, somebody kind of muddled to Coach Tomlin, hey, the Ravens just traded up and got Jackson. And you could tell that was not a happy moment for him. You know, it was what he said was, how'd they get back in? You know, like violently, like, what are you talking about? And like, that's the guy that if you look at the real NFL, and I think you asked every defensive coordinator in the league of the five guys coming out, who do you least want to play against? I think Jackson's number one.
Yeah, I mean, really interesting with the whole Lamar Jackson thing. I thought he was going to go off the board maybe as early as that like 8 to 12, 8 to 13 range. I thought maybe a team trading up. So it was a great job by Baltimore to jump back in there, get him. And I think he's going to push, you know, I don't think he's going to start this year, but I wouldn't be surprised late in the year if Baltimore is not in prime playoff position, if he gets on the field sooner rather than later at the back end of the season, almost gearing him up for 2019. So it's going to be fun to watch that. If we spin it a little bit towards Dynasty and Dynasty rookie ranks, obviously many listeners of ours also listen to the Dino Blueprint. You guys have done a great job with your big board episodes the last 2 weeks. In terms of the quarterbacks, though, where would you feel comfortable maybe in rookie drafts, in typical one quarterback leagues, investing in a guy like Lamar Jackson? And is he clearly above the other quarterbacks in terms of maybe where you would be looking to pick those guys in dynasty rookie drafts?
Yes. And like most people, you know, I don't value the quarterback position much in a one quarterback league, but I do with him. I think he's that special. I'm sitting here looking at my rookie ranks, and he's my 15th overall player right after James Washington. And I don't have another quarterback ranked until 27. So there's a pretty big gap there. I want him on my team. He's the type of guy that, if he starts sliding in my dynasty rookie draft in the second round, I'm going to put an offer in to try to snag him. And then I'm looking at my overall quarterback ranks. You know, Carson Wentz is one. I got Lamar Jackson 16, and that's ahead of Mahomes. That's ahead of Trubisky. I mean, guys that are kind of hot right now. I think he is, like I said, I mean, just in the real football world, I love him. I think people will hate playing against him, but I like him even more for fantasy. I mean, he's going to create big plays.
Yeah, and while I'm sure you don't have clear two quarterback rankings, if you were in one of those leagues where quarterback value obviously got pushed up the board, if it was a super flex or two quarterback, how high do you think you could see Lamar Jackson going in rookie drafts, in your opinion, if it was where the quarterback did have more value? Are we thinking top five? Are we thinking after Saquon? Do you think it would be that high for you?
Yeah, and anyone's listening to the Dynasty Blueprint, whenever two quarterback league questions come up, I always defer to Ryan, and I ask him these questions. But I'm sitting here thinking about it. I mean, I'm not that big on Penny. I don't love Chubb's landing spot. I mean, I really like where Ronald Jones went, but I don't love him as a prospect. I look at it like Barkley sits alone. Geis and Michelle are 2 and 3 for me. But if it was a two quarterback league, I might be on Jackson at 4 overall. Does that sound crazy? You guys probably know better than I do.
No, I'm right there with Paul. I mean, like, that would be definitely one of those guys that I'd be thinking has to be in that equation. Paul, do you feel the same way?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think in two quarterback leagues, quarterbacks, the elite level quarterbacks easily could push their way into round one. And when you really stop and think about the upside that Lamar Jackson has, you know, there's no reason why he couldn't push that into that mix. And I would, you know, I know for me, you know, I have a clear top three running backs that I like, but I think at 4, he would be very much in the conversation for people as well. So I think you're right there. I think that's where quarterbacks could start coming off the board in two quarterback leagues, maybe even number 3, because I think some people are a little bit torn at number 3. I know I feel pretty solid in who my number 3 is right now, and I'm sure we'll bring him up here as Matt transitions this.
Yeah, and I think that was the perfect segue, actually, moving into the running back position, Matt. And again, looking at, you know, again, taking that 35,000 foot, that scheme perspective, that NFL Sunday on the couch watching your favorite team view, looking at the top running backs off the board, I mean, many are trying to argue that this might be one of the more decorated running back classes in terms of, you know, overall depth and maybe some top end talent. I just want to know what your perspective was on terms of the landing spots here before we kind of get into that dynasty spin on things. How did you feel about these running backs going into the draft, where they were drafted, and, you know, of the top backs, let's say 1 through 10, I could probably say 1 through 8, from Saquon Barkley to Darius Geis, Sony Michel, Nick Chubb, Ronald Jones, Kerryon Johnson, Penny, and Freeman, for example. What did you think about their landing spots and the schemes and the teams they kind of went to?
Yeah, and that's a good long conversation. I mean, we could probably do an entire podcast just on that, you know? I mean, you know, you look at, like, I don't love Royce Freeman and Kerryon Johnson. Like, if I was a GM and I drafted them, I would probably have the intentions of, these are committee backs that maybe a year or two from now I upgrade on. They're quality players, but their landing spots are great. Although I think people kind of are a little light on Devontae Booker too. I think the Booker's a decent player and he adds a lot as a receiver, but clearly the Lions want to run the football. That Matt Patricia has to be pulling his hair out, taking his job, going, we can't have this running game look like it has the last since Barry Sanders, you know, that we're going to draft a center. We're going to run the ball a lot, but that might mean LeGarrette Blount. You know, that might mean Reddick. It could mean Abdullah. I don't think Kerryon Johnson's special enough for me to say, boy, he's going to get 75% of the carries there. And maybe will next year. He's okay. You know, where I look at Freeman, and I like him a little better. I like his landing spot a little better for now. But I bet him and Booker are pretty much a committee all year. And it seems like the hot topic nowadays is, well, which one of these mid-round running backs is going to be Kamara or Hunt this year? Nobody. You know, that doesn't happen often. You know, we can't act like that. That's a common thing that happens every year, that a third-round running back leads the league in rushing and the other one wins the Rookie of the Year and is a total fantasy superstar. Like, I don't think either one of those guys is half the talent that Kamara is. I loved Chubb, you know, to be honest with you, and I hate his landing spot because I think Hyde's a good player. They invested in him. As good as their roster looks now by Brown's standards, I still think they'll be losing a lot, and that Duke Johnson's going to be – is a nice dynasty buy low right now. He's going to catch a lot of passes. So until they get to be – until they really get their feet under them, I'm not sure that Chubb is going to pay off for you for a while, but I love the player. Didn't love Penny as a player at all, and but it's hard to argue with his landing spot. I know the offensive line isn't good, and we've heard this for years and years, but there's a lot invested in that offensive line, and there's a new offensive line coach. Having a running quarterback always helps. I think Penny's going to put up numbers almost by default. I mean, they too, like Detroit, have to establish some sort of running game. You know, no one had over like 250 yards last year at the running back position for them. Russell Wilson led the team in rushing. That has to change, and that's going to be a big workload for Penny, and I think he'll do fine numbers-wise.
Yeah, I mean, Penny's one of those guys that I'm right there with you. He was my number 7 or 8 pre-draft, and I've moved him up, obviously, a spot or two, but I'm not going to go too aggressive because I do think so many of those running backs are pretty much in similar situations in terms of draft capital, whether it's late round one, round two, they're going to get an opportunity to become their guys. If I just ask you really a two-part question to close out the running back discussion, can you maybe just give us a little bit of what the top of your dynasty running back rankings look like, and how many of them would you feel comfortable taking before you pivoted to another position, you know, most likely a wide receiver?
Yeah, and we don't have to harp on this, but I think Barkley is a absolutely rare special running back and the best one I've ever seen coming out of school. I mean, especially when you factor in for the year that he got drafted and his receiving skills. So, you know, that's not news that he's standing alone. My 2 and 3, though, and I keep flopping back and forth on these, are Darius Geis right now at 2 and Sony Michel at 3. And I know a lot of people said, man, Michel landing with the Patriots, that hurts them bad. You know, they're going to have a committee. Belichick doesn't use a first-round pick on a running back and have him sit. You know, he's going to do everything. He might be the goal line guy. I don't think Jeremy Hill, and certainly, what's-his-face, the dude they signed from the Bills last year, they may not even make the team. I think Michelle's going to be a do-it-all guy and put up massive numbers. I've been landing him in all my rookie drafts. Anytime he falls past 3 or 4, I'm attacking, trying to get him. And I really like the Geis landing spot too. I mean, that's a good offensive line. I think they'll stay dedicated to the run game. I think he's highly talented. And we haven't mentioned Ronald Jones. I mean, he may have had the best landing spot of all. I would have loved to have seen Geis in Tampa.
Yeah, absolutely. And you brought up Barkley and how special of a player he is. And I know, I think I heard on one of the more recent Dino Blueprints that you were just in the process of kind of blending the rookies with the current running backs. How high is Barkley on that? Like, if you were in a startup dynasty league, how many other running backs would you even prefer to have over Saquon Barkley?
Only Gurley and Elliott right now. So he's third on my running back overall list. And David Johnson's nipping at his heels. I mean, I really think Johnson is the best running back in the NFL right now, and he's just kind of the forgotten man. But I also don't love his offensive line and his situation. I think he's going to be a highly targeted dude. I mean, the defense will be keying on him left and right. But I got Barkley 3, and it wouldn't shock me at all if by week 6 or so we all say he's the number one dynasty running back.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I guess one more quick final thing that I just mentioned I want to make sure I get your take on is how deep would you go in wide receivers in a rookie draft before maybe you pivoted to the wide receiver position? Because I know some people think it's 7 or 8. Some people think it's 4 or 5. Do you have if you were looking at your overall big board, you know, how far down would maybe be your first wide receiver before you kind of went away from the running back? So I know you talked a little bit about Kerryon Johnson, Royce Freeman, and you don't love their talents. You think they're more committee guys. Would you take your top wide receiver or two before those guys?
Yeah, I would. I have 6 backs, and those are the guys we've kind of just talked about, with Chubb being number 6, and I feel bad putting them there, but it's more because of the landing spot. And then I go Moore, Kirk, Ridley, and then I come back to Freeman and Johnson. So if I picked in the top 6, I would end up with a running back. After that, 7, DJ Moore. But I think you could make the argument that he deserves to go a little higher. I really like the prospect. I think the landing spot's good. So that sounds like a knock on Moore, but it really isn't.
No, and those are some really fantastic takes going back and forth between the running backs as well as the wide receivers. I mean, you look at the running back class, I think most people are probably sitting about where you are, Matt. And if they are wavering in any way, hopefully this provides the clarity they need, because it seems like it's going to be running back early and often as we go into this year's draft. And now if we transition to probably the most enigmatic position, the position that is really the most puzzling for me, and that's the wide receiver position. And we kind of started alluding to who would we be taking and where. How do you feel about, you know, the wide receiver position? I mean, going into it, we've talked at length and in many different areas about how there's a razor thin, almost playing card level type of thin between, you know, levels and tiers and players. And we hope the draft would clear it up. But I'm not entirely sure the draft really cleared up any value for us. I'm not sure if it just kind of jumbled it even more. I mean, what did you think about this class, some of the landing spots, and how it shook out for you?
Yeah, like everyone, I didn't see a number one receiver. You know, I do think Moore stands alone at the top, but I don't think he's the next Andre Johnson or Calvin Johnson or, you know, I mean, in my dynasty ranks, I don't have him ranked until 24 overall. I have him like with Jarvis Landry and Golden Tate. So I like him, but, you know, I don't think that he's a wide receiver one for the foreseeable future. Same with Ridley. Same with Kirk. But I do like some of the second round guys. You know, just to take a step back, a lot of people going into this draft and going into the season talked about how there's a million running backs. I don't think there are. I don't think it's a very deep running back class, contrary to popular belief. But I do think it's a pretty deep receiver class. I really like Anthony Miller. You know, Cortland Sutton, James Washington, they're the normal names. I think Michael Gallup's probably a little higher than people think, you know, or than he should be based on his landing spot, which I think is inflating his stock a little bit. But I like Pettis. I like Galloway a lot. I like Traquan Smith. And I really like Jamon Moore, too, as like a late second round type guy.
Yeah. And you know what? I would love to even take this conversation down a little bit further. How do you feel about some of the, you talk about the depth. How do you feel about some of those players that fall into, for example, a situation that I'm very intrigued with getting your opinion on is Indiana. And really looking at Indianapolis and looking at Deion Kane and Darius Fountain and, you know, what they did there in terms of the players that they took, because I mean, it feels like it's pretty wide open there and there's a lot of opportunity to be had. Do you think there's a worthwhile kind of flyer investment in that team? Do you think that that's a group of wide receivers where somebody, just by virtue of somebody having to play, could materialize from this class?
Absolutely. You know, you're kind of taking a shot in the dark of which of the two do, and or do they compete with each other? But I don't think there's a lot in the way. But to really bring up the Colts, the guy I always land in, always ends up on my team in my rookie drafts now, is Nyheim Hines. And kind of like I talked about with Duke Johnson, even if Luck plays, I think the Colts are the worst team in the league. You know, I think they're going to, their defense is dreadful. I think they're going to get blown out game after game. That I think you're going to see Hines catch a lot of balls in a Chris Thompson, Theo Riddick, Duke Johnson role, and maybe become more of a feature player than people realize. And maybe have him on the field, you know, with Mack or, you know, with another running back, with Wilkins, somebody like that, because they don't have receivers, that he may be the Tariq Cohen. I mean, so I know that's not what you asked me, but I think Nyheim Hines is being vastly underrated, especially in PPR leagues. And you know, a guy like Luck is going to be phenomenal at moving him around the formation, you know, Brady like with James White, getting him isolated on linebackers. And they're always going to be losing. They're terrible.
Yeah, I mean, really interesting stuff. I'm glad that we brought up Hines, because he was a guy that I wanted to bring up in the running back conversation, and I forgot to bring him up because I do think after those eight that we talked about in the running back group, I do think Hines is that guy that, especially if you play in PPR leagues, could definitely be of intrigue. If we go back
to
my
18th ranked rookie, so I think that's higher than most people have him.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I know for me, I think I have him, I have all the quarterbacks very grouped together, but I have him a little bit below that, and I have Kalen Ballage right there too, because I do think, you know, in schematically, I could see them being utilized in similar ways, and Ballage really leaves a lot to be desired in terms of his running ability, but definitely, you know, has some ability to catch the football, and it'll be interesting to see if Adam Gase and the rest of that Miami staff, you know, try to maximize that, because they don't really have too much there, and aging Frank Gore, and then Kenyon Drake obviously developed a little bit last year. So it'll be fun to see that. If I take this back to wide receiver for a second, sure. How do you approach it with guys in terms of draft capital, pretty similar day two guys, you know, but a guy like Michael Gallup, who is going to have probably a lot more opportunity immediately to produce compared to other guys, like maybe like a guy like Cortland Sutton, who for all intents and purposes might really not do much this year, but Demaryius Thomas has a $17 million, you know, salary next year. I can't imagine him getting that. So there could be obviously a big opening next year for Cortland Sutton to emerge. How do you kind of take in that when you, in your own personal ranks and in terms of, you know, your philosophy in terms of a guy who could offer that immediate production, or maybe a guy who maybe is more talented, but you might have to wait a year or so out?
Yeah. And I think the obvious answer is, well, if I'm a contender and my receivers are kind of light, I'm going to take Gallup and I'm going to start playing them, and I can't wait around for Sutton. But I think that's a mistake. I think dynasty owners make that mistake way too often. That to me, Sutton is a much, much better prospect, a much better dynasty prospect in a vacuum. And I think people get too short-sighted. You know, you laid that out really well, that what's the chances Demaryius is around next year? Probably not much. I mean, he has to restructure. He's kind of a limited route runner too. They're trying to, you know, build some youth and get some, you know, get guys like Sutton on the field and Hamilton and those guys. So I don't think that, you know, people look at him like, boy, he's blocked, but not for long. And oh, by the way, Dallas, you know, you look at it and say, well, Gallup's going to be the number one. Yeah, but then they're going to draft a receiver in the first round and they're going to sign, you know, whoever the best possible guy is, because they don't, you know, they'll have money to spend and they're going to be aggressive. That he's going to be Robert Woods to me if everything works out. And that's not what I'm after with, you know, an early second round pick. I mean, if a guy like Sutton's on the board that could hit for you.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be aggressive. Yeah, I mean, I think that's good advice. I know, like, me personally, I've been moving my ranks a lot. I think sometimes right after, like, the moment in the draft, it's very easy, like, when you make those immediate rankings, like, right on the spot, the night of, you know, night one, night two, it's easy to sometimes get a little bit swept away by landing spot and immediate production. But when you really stop to think about it, I know I've kind of, even my running back rankings, I've shuffled them around and almost have went back more to what I thought about them just as prospects in general. Like when I put the time in to watch these guys, and I'm kind of seeing the wide receivers also kind of start moving around and ending up that way as well. Before we ask you just a little bit, maybe to kind of go into your rankings a little bit on that, those, that massive group of, you know, second tier wide receivers after like Moore and Ridley, what are your thoughts? Cause I know Matt and I are really high and we basically said he was in our top three in just pure film analysis leading up to the draft. What are your thoughts on Antonio Callaway and what he could potentially offer there for the Browns?
Yeah. I mean, they will take chances on character issue guys. You know, I mean, I know for a fact he was not on quite a few boards across the NFL. That being said, who cares? You know, I mean, I don't care what his off the field issues are. He's not, I'm not asking him to babysit my kids. I'm asking him to score fantasy points for me on Sundays. Right now, I really do think he is blocked. You know, I mean, Gordon is a superstar and Landry's going to play. Could he go past Coleman quickly? Maybe. And I got to be honest, I kind of thought Coleman would not be a Brown by, what is it, May 15th or whatever it is today. I thought he'd have been shipped out and would have probably been good for him to see, you know, a new change of scenery. But he's another one. It's funny because I've done four rookie drafts so far, and the guys I most often end up with are Sony Michel, usually being aggressive to go get him, Lamar Jackson, Nyheim Hines, and Antonio Callaway. You know, those have been guys that keep ending up on my team, and usually it takes me to move up three spots to go get him. I can't believe he's fallen, you know. So I'm a believer, too, and it goes back to that same conversation, is he's immensely talented. I mean, you guys have watched him quite a bit. I mean, he might be the most talented wide receiver in this entire class, and if you can get him as a late second-round pick in Dynasty start, a rookie, yeah, sign me up.
Yeah, I mean, just speaking to Callaway throughout the year, I mean, it was a player that Paul and I were very high on. And, you know, Callaway was a guy that I thought, you know, when you watch him, you know, play the game, he's one of those guys that just knows how to use the space on the field to his advantage. Mm-hmm. He can exploit it. He can use it. He can change the hips of the defensive back. He knows how to create that indecision. And not only that, you're talking about a guy who's incredibly fast on top of that. So he's beating you with speed. He's beating you with play speed and intelligence. He's beating you on the field in so many different ways. Those things to me are transferable. Those will translate because it's not just about his physical prowess. It's about his mental acuity, his cognitive acuity, his ability to really understand what's happening in front of him. And yes, he's
great,
not going
to body control. And yeah. Smooth and yes.
Right. I mean, he doesn't, you know what it is? He's not going to win the 50-50 ball, Matt. But if you're trying to run him that way, I think you're missing out on a fantastic player. This guy returned punts. This guy is tough. He's Anthony Miller, only a little stronger and faster. And that's pretty incredible.
Yeah. It's like, it's a pretty good comparison.
It's not that far
faster
off.
Faster for sure.
Yeah, and not that far off. I mean, so if you love Anthony Miller, you can go and get, I think, a guy a half a tick up in terms of everything. And I think that if we love Anthony Miller, you should be in love with Antonio Callaway as an athlete and prospect on the NFL level. I mean, granted, me, I'm spinning yarns about him, but, you know, I'll stop waxing prose about him. But that's my thought on the guy. I think he's really that potentially that good.
Are you taking him? How early are you guys taking him then? Obviously, you're very high on him. I'm getting him around 2.9-ish in that neighborhood, and I'm very happy about it. Are you guys going even earlier on him?
No, that's it for me. That's about where I'm seeing him going. I'm willing to take him right there. I'm looking at him as, once we start getting past the Cortland Suttons and the Michael Gallups of the world, for me right now on my board, you know, I have him literally keeps volleying back and forth between Dante Pettis, Antonio Callaway. So after the game,
I was just about to say that. That's hilarious. I'm sitting looking at my Excel spreadsheet, and I got Pettis 19 and Callaway 20, and I was just about to flip them, and then I was going to bring it up to you guys. Who do you like better? Because I'm torn. I keep going back and forth on those guys.
No, and I think it's about how do you play the stock market? Are you more risk adverse or are you a little bit more conservative? Because I think if you're a little bit more risk adverse, then you're probably thinking with Dante Pettis. If you're a little bit go for the gusto, then I think Antonio Galloway is your guy. If you have that strength at your wide receiver core, why not stash him on your bench and see what happens? I mean, if you missed out on the home run, you know, a guy like a Cortland Sutton, who we just talked about, could be that number one, really could be that guy that you stash and see what happens. If you miss out on that, I think Antonio Callaway has that upside from a talent perspective.
And the Dante, he could be a game changer for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the Dante Pettis thing, I go back to, Matt, what you said before. Like, San Francisco is one of those teams, just like Dallas, who I don't see Dante Pettis being a number one. I think they're going to get Jimmy Garoppolo a number one. You know, I think it was on your most recent episode, you were talking about that Kyle Shanahan system, going back to his dad and stuff. They always had that really big guy, whether it was Brandon Marshall, then Andre Johnson. I feel like they're going to get that in San Francisco, so maybe it's next year in round one, or maybe it's next year in free agency. I just look at those two guys, and the more and more I think about it, I think I could see a scenario down the line where Antonio Callaway is an impact fantasy football player if things break right, if he stays clean and all this other stuff and gets the opportunity. Even if Dante Pettis is a clear starter there, I don't know if he has the upside. And I do think that they are going to go out and get, you know, some other big time wide receiver sooner rather than later. It's the same thing with Michael Gallup. It's why, you know, I'm going to, you know, I got to update my ranks a little bit, and I feel like I'm going to move him down a little bit to make sure I get some of those other guys ahead of them. So before we transition this to tight ends, Matt,
a great point, though. I mean, I really think Gallup and Pettis are similar that way, where they're going to look appealing. They're probably going to have nice rookie years, but especially San Francisco, you know, that whole entire coaching staff and front office really just started this process. They have a big picture formula in mind, and there hasn't been an Andre Johnson available to go out and get. But when there is, they're going to be aggressive to get him.
Yeah, absolutely. And from listening to you talk, I assume, is more Ridley at the top of your ranks for the wide receivers?
I go more Kirk Ridley, but I have him 7, 8, 9 overall in my rookies. I don't love Ridley's. I want to see more of Ridley at the NFL level, to be honest with you, just because when I was with the Browns, the thing that the receivers coach really, really stressed to all the scouts is watch every snap of press man coverage you absolutely can. And just his body type, I wonder how he's going to deal with that when Jalen Ramsey, Patrick Peterson come press him at the line of scrimmage. That's my only concern with the guy.
Yeah, I mean, and I think those are viable concerns. And, you know, I think the opportunity him to play alongside Julio, I think, could be fantastic for him, where he might not end up having to match up against some of those guys you're talking about early on if he ended up in a different landing spot. And then after those three guys, is it in some order Sutton, Washington, Anthony Miller from listening to you talk about these guys?
Yeah, Sutton, Miller, Washington.
Okay, and then you go.
Then a little gap, Gallup, and then a little gap, Pettis, Callaway.
Gotcha. Okay. So why don't we take this to the tight end position? Again, maybe just talk a little bit about, you know, where some of these guys landed. Obviously, it wasn't perfect landing spots for some of these guys, in particular Dallas Goedert. You know, two of them ended up in Baltimore. Ian Thomas, I know, was getting some buzz leading up to the draft. Obviously, he's going to have to wait it out there, you know, with Greg Olsen. What was your take on the tight ends?
Yeah, and going into the draft, I thought Goddard was by far the best NFL and basically fantasy prospect. I really, really liked him. I thought the Eagles got a great addition to their team. They're going to play a lot of double tight end sets. And kind of going against everything I said before, I had to drop him, though, because, I mean, he's not even a starter. I mean, as much as you like Trey Burton last year, he didn't help your fantasy. It's hard to check that box on Sunday morning to start a backup tight end, even if they play a lot of double tight end sets. So Goddard is unfortunately trapped. So that sort of broke my heart. If he would have went to Dallas, he clearly would have been my number one. And I know that's going against everything I was saying about landing spots and all those things, but I think he's a really, really good player. So I have Gesicki kind of sitting alone because Gase, and this is well known, but Gase very, very much needs that athletic, alone in 3-by-1 sets type of guy. and they tried to do it in Julius Thomas. He's been looking for that guy for some time, and Gesicki's going to get every opportunity to do it. He's highly athletic. I don't know that he plays as athletic as he as his numbers indicated at the combine, but he's going to stretch the field. I think he's going to be on the field a lot. They, you know, there's a lot of targets to go around there without Landry involved. So he's clearly my one. Then I wait, and Hurst is a little bit behind him. Again, a pretty good landing spot. And then Goddard. But I'm not really going out of my way to add any of these guys.
So just out of curiosity, if we kind of talk a little bit about the two things, actually, the Gesicki comment, I think that when you go back to even going back to what he did at Penn State and you look at what Moorhead did and how he played offense, he really liked having his tight ends get a lot of work. So I agree with you on film. He certainly never played as fast. In fact, I thought he played faster at the Senior Bowl from things that I saw from that footage. I thought he looked better at the Senior Bowl than he looked on actual game film from Penn State film. But that being said,
Joe Moorhead's a good friend of mine, by the way.
I actually just finished watching their spring game, and I'm telling you, man, you watch what he's doing already with that team, and it's going to be fun to watch Mississippi State play, man. They're going to be a really nice team, and he's going to get maximum ability out of a lot of his players. They're a nice team to watch. They're going to be a fun team to look at this year. Their defense is stacked.
He's a Pittsburgh guy. He's a year older than I am, and he was on Pitt staff a year before I got there, and then he was our wide receivers coach at Akron when I was the director of football ops. So Joe's a good dude.
Did Joe call you? Did you get any calls about going to Mississippi State?
No.
Come on. You gotta, like, come on, Joe. They were talking about it on the telecast. They're like, he's Pittsburgh strong.
Oh, he's Pittsburgh strong. He's Central Catholic, Danny Marino's high school. Yeah, he's a big time Pittsburgh.
Oh, they were talking about it all over the place. They were like, you got to see the guys he brought in. So anyway, going back to this, my question really goes back to, do you think that the Dallas vacation now of Jason Witten, his retirement, do you think Dalton Schultz and his well-rounded game could emerge as an early contributor?
Could, almost by default. I know Rico Gathers is getting some pub, but I'm not real excited about him. I don't know. I mean, maybe. I mean, I'm open to the idea, but I'm not using fantasy draft picks on him, and I don't know. I don't have a strong feeling about it, to be very honest with you. I think it's a good thing to investigate, and if he starts to get more and more first-team reps as the preseason goes, hop all over him, because the opportunity will be there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of those situations that he could fall into some productive weeks, but not a guy you're probably going to see consistency with in that Dallas offense, even if he does play a lot, mostly due to his blocking ability. In terms of rookie drafts, obviously nobody is first round caliber. Do you have any of these tight ends in terms of that you're willing to pull the trigger on in round two, or are they more all round three or beyond?
No, I have Gesicki in that Nyheim Hines, Pettis, Callaway area, you know, Gallup, Lamar Jackson, but he's probably last of that group to me. So 210 or so as kind of a consolation prize if I don't get one of those dudes I like.
And then guys like Hurst, would that be somewhere in round
two? Ooh, I got Hurst 24th overall, but I wouldn't use a second round pick on him, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, and it doesn't make sense, but it does.
Yeah, it's one of those things that you have him ranked there, but you would either move that around or trade it out or move it, use that pick to move up with something else to get a guy that you're more interested in. So I think
Callaway would be there, and I'd take him, or you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. It's just one of those things that, you know, a lot of these guys didn't really land, you know, in some ideal landing spots. You know, I know I'm intrigued by Christopher Herndon, and I think there's an open opportunity there for the Jets. He'd be a guy I play in, you know, Matt as well. We play in a lot of leagues that either you start two tight ends or really deep rosters, or they're tight end premium leagues. That Herndon is a guy that intrigues me, that I can see round four, round five of some of my rookie drafts taking a stab on him, because I think if he was healthy for the rest, the stretch of the season and then through the pre-draft process, I think he might have generated a little bit more buzz out there. And let's be honest, I mean, the Jets receiving group as a whole obviously leaves a lot to be desired. So there's definitely someone you know, who could emerge there, whether it's Jordan Leggett from last year's draft class, or I think Herndon's more talented. I think one of those guys, you know, could just be thrown into the mix and potentially, you know, grow with Sam Darnold. So I think Herndon is a guy that definitely intrigues me.
Yeah, that's a great one. He was injured, but there is a lot of ability there. Good receiver. Ideal landing spot. I mean, going into the NFL draft, there was 5, 6, 7 teams that were just awful at the tight end position. And the Jets were one of them. One other guy that I kind of would look at in that 4th, 5th round type of range too, that I know he's not really a hot, sexy name right now, but Fumagalli, I think he's a good football player. I mean, I think he's one of those tight ends that knows where to be, catches the football, get what there is, reliable, isn't going to any Pro Bowls, but his quarterback's going to like him.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Oh, Matt, go.
No. I was going to say, I'm 100% with you on Fumagalli, because that was a guy who, like you said, I think it goes down to, again, that cognitive understanding of the game. He's always a guy that's in the right place at the right time and knows how to break down defensive coverages. He's a really nice overall player, and he gives you 100%. I know that's such a cliche, but I definitely don't think that guy leaves anything in the gas tank, for sure.
And coaches are going to love him. He'll probably be active on game day for special teams. And then you start to kind of chisel away a role.
Yeah, absolutely. Matt, before we wrap it up for tonight, I know obviously you have your pulse on all things Pittsburgh Steelers. So we'd be remiss if we didn't at least get your thoughts on Mason Rudolph, in Jalen Samuels. I mean, do you feel that Mason Rudolph has a legitimate shot to be the heir to Roethlisberger? Is that the vibe, you know, that you feel? And Jalen Samuels, like, do you have any idea what their role, are they looking at him as, you know, do they have a clear idea of how they're going to use him right now? Do they potentially see a scenario if Le'Veon Bell leaves after the year that, like, James Conner is their early down runner and Jalen Samuels is their third down guy? Or, you know, they'd probably be very much in the market for a running back.
Yeah, let's start with Samuels. I don't think Bell will be a Steeler next year. And once again, I think they will run him into the ground, run him till the wheels come off, and this time they won't franchise him again. He'll be on his merry way with a lot of wear and tear on his body. And I don't think his successor is on the team. Connor is a hard-charging, good back, but hasn't shown he can stay on the field. You know, so I thought running back was a substantial need going into the draft for someone to at least challenge Connor as the number two. He's okay. He's an okay receiver. He's not a special player. He's a number two all day long if everything goes well. Samuels, to me, though, is the chess piece guy, though, that I think you can do the same things with him from a receiving standpoint that you do with Bell, you know, that you can put him out there, not change the playbook, detach him out wide, run wide receiver routes with him. Clearly he's going to have a massive role on special teams, which again, should keep him active on game day. I think they'll move him all over the formation. I think he'll play fullback, but he won't be Rosie Nick's blaster face-off downhill guy. So him and Bell may be on the field together once in a while. May line up as an H-back. Will probably get a handful of carries, or, you know, 50 carries throughout the year, maybe in mop-up duty. They tend to really just lean on Bell to no end. But I think he's probably a much better NFL football player than he is fantasy asset, because in the end, he may end up with 2 catches and 2 carries, and you know, even if he hits, he's not going to be on the field all the time. As for Mayfield, I'm kind of on the fence with him in that Landry Jones is a free agent after this year, and they like Landry a lot. He's making money. Not that he's going to make a ton of money on the open market this year, but that's a lot invested in the quarterback position with Ben making $1 billion, Jones getting a new contract. I look at Mayfield and think, worst case scenario for Mayfield's career is he's a Landry Jones. He's a middle of the road backup quarterback that stays in this league a really long time and doesn't hurt you when he has to get out there. Could he be the next successor? Yes. And before the draft, the thing I said was really the quarterback solution or the heir apparent should come a year from now. But it's not a really good quarterback draft, and you know, who's to say who's going to be there? And I said the only two guys in this draft that the Steelers might have a shot at that I would consider drafting are Lamar Jackson and Rudolph. And At 28, I would have ran to the podium to take Lamar Jackson. They obviously didn't agree with me. I already told you my feelings on him. And when Rudolph started to slip, they moved up a little to get him. I think they look at him as a potential starter. And as much as they like James Washington, though, if they looked at Rudolph and really did lump him with Darnold and Rosen and all those guys, they would have taken him where they took Washington. You know, I mean, if you had a starting franchise quarterback grade on the guy, you wouldn't have drafted two people before him.
No,
that doesn't mean he can't be, though.
No. And I'm right there with you on that. I think that I looked at Rudolph pre-draft as a guy who could be, you know, a phenomenal backup quarterback, a guy who could stabilize your team if your starter were to go down, and you know that you can run the rest of your schedule, you know, you can run the rest of your scheme, and you're not going to take a step backwards. And those guys don't grow on trees either. I mean, and they save you a lot of money. So, I mean,
you'll be a multimillionaire and play 12 years doing that.
Exactly. And in that respect, I think that, you know, just as we kind of close out the show, like guys like Kyle LaLetta, I mean, the Giants brought in LaLetta. I see a very similar style of player, like the idea that he could stabilize, a quarterback room. He's a guy who could, if he's not the answer or Webb is not the answer and we transition away from Eli after a year or so, well, then of course, then he's a guy who could stabilize your franchise until you find that answer. But
real quick, if I could just butt in real quick. I was at ESPN for 10 years, and I think every other year they asked me, Matt, rank the 32 backup quarterbacks and give me a couple of sentences on each. I urge everyone out there to try to do that. It's a miserable exercise with how bad it is. You know, like Matt Schaub is still on the list. I'm like, there's some terrible players. So that when you do have a guy that, just like you said, is a solid number two, plays for a long time, doesn't embarrass himself, that's absolutely worth an NFL third round pick.
Yeah. And I think that's where we have difficulty teasing out the differences between fantasy and reality.
Absolutely.
And we kind of look at these things through that lens of our dynasty teams. And sometimes we forget the business side and team building side that is the draft. So, Matt, I mean, I think you've been remarkably gracious with your time and as always, just dropping insight and knowledge into everything that you do and all of your experiences is really such a treat for us to kind of sit here and listen to. I know you've just unveiled WilliamsonFootball.com. Can you take the listeners a little behind the scenes as what they have to offer? I mean, I've seen you had the state of the team addresses, which I thought were fantastic. I got a chance to read some of those that you had posted, and just the depth that you go into, I think from that 360-degree perspective, is really what people are going to find unique about some of the content you're putting out.
Yeah, and to be very honest, you know, since I left ESPN, I had worked for a million different sites, and I got pretty darn tired of, you know, just, I'm going to make, you know, a couple hundred bucks on this site, a couple hundred bucks on this site. I'm tired of writing for everybody else. I'm just going to start my own. And it's going well, slow but sure. The content, and I'm not bragging and I'm not lying, people know me that I'm a straight shooter, is the best I've ever written. And I've been writing now for almost 15 years. And it's heavily in depth. There'll be fantasy. All my dynasty ranks are there. They're posted. All the podcasts are posted. Right now I'm going through all the divisions and writing, you know, over-unders. That the Bears are Vegas has the Bears winning 6.5 games. Should they bet over or under? You know, so a paragraph on that. I did that state of the X team, 32 teams, you know, 2,000 words. And I'm just flooding people with content, and it's good stuff. So check it out, WilliamsonFootball.com. It's easy to find. I think you'll dig it.
His name is Matt Williamson. You can find him at Williamson NFL, and you can find him on air at Steelers Nation Radio on the Dynasty Blueprint, holding it down with our boy, Mr. Ryan McDowell. And of course, Locked On the NFL, where his takes on things are just tremendous. And of course, if you haven't had a chance to go to WilliamsonFootball.com and check out some of the content, I know you're offering some teasers right now, Matt, some freebies to entice people to kind of come check out the work. I got to tell you something. I've had a chance to sit down and read a lot of the stuff that he's posted. It is fantastic, and it's well worth the time and the investment. Matt, thank you so much for coming on the show this evening. It really was a blast.
Yes, it was a blast. Let's do it again. Thanks so much, guys.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot. So, Paul, any parting shots before we call it a night?
No, just really enjoyed this episode talking about these prospects, talking about their landing spots, talking about, you know, dynasty rankings. I found myself, you know, with my rankings open in the background, adjusting things. Because I think the more you talk through things, the more you hear other people's takes and just the reasoning behind it. I think, you know, it's constantly, you know, evolving, adapting and, you know, almost staying true sometimes to your own takes. And I think, you know, sometimes it's so easy, like I said before, to really, you know, live in the moment on draft weekend and worry so much about landing spots and then talking about, like we did with Dallas and San Francisco in particular, like they're going to be in the market for a true number one. So maybe don't push up guys like Dante Pettis and Michael Gallup so much. So it was a great time. You know, again, as Matt reiterated, thank you so much, Matt, for joining us. Greatly appreciate it. And we definitely look forward to doing it again. So on behalf of our special guest, Matt Williamson, on behalf of Matt, and on behalf of our sound and tech engineer, David Nakano, and myself, thank you for joining us. And we look forward next time taking you from Saturday to Sunday.